Do you remember a time when sleeping on the floor with your friends wouldn't have been considered weird? The management of this website invites you to a new dimension in podcasting, an experience so fun it can only be compared to a childhood sleepover. It's not just about horror.
Tom Atkins proves that any man is leading man material.
It's not just about action.
If you're going to rank Van Damme movies,
yeah, it's up there.
I'd put it top five.
It's not just about comedy.
There's no other person in the world that loves Weekend at Bernie's more than you.
It's not just about science fiction.
And you scrim with, like, a beautiful comb over.
It's about nostalgia. Can you survive the Saturday night movie sleepover? It's not a movie. It's a podcast about movies.
You can follow Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. That's SaturdaySleepovers.podwitz.com. On Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, Player FM, and Stitcher.
Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because we're talking about a movie shot on video, because it's Junesploitation, and this is dropping on Shot on Video Day. We're going to be talking about Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later, the movie where Sandra Bullock goes into rehab and becomes a zombie. I am joined for this very special episode by the man you hear right now, Mr. Mark Ahn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, guys. I don't have the rage virus. I am just an angry
Asian
person.
You're just an a-hole.
Yeah. It's not the rage virus. This is just, it's a Monday.
I want to remind, you hate Garfield. I was going to say, you hate Mondays like Garfield.
I really hate Garfield.
But then I blew it. Good for you. More of a Heathcliff man. The cracked to Garfield's Mad magazine.
Wow. That's a deep cut.
Is it, though? When I was a kid, I read Cracked because my sister read Mad, and I had to differentiate myself somehow. So I was like, I'm going to go Cracked, and I'm going to drink Pepsi, and I'm going to support Heathcliff.
It was really just for you. No one else noticed the microscopic differences between those things.
No, not really. What's the story with Heathcliff? Like, Garfield is lazy and likes to eat.
I think
What's Heathcliff's thing?
I think Heathcliff is just the same color, but he seems to be more of an extrovert. He seems to be more of, like, the center of the party.
So there's no, like, single joke with Heathcliff the way there is with Garfield?
No.
It's not like, wow. He's not, like, a racist cat or something?
No, he doesn't. I don't think Heathcliff has an owner either. He's just sort of like...
He's feral.
He's like an independent. They would say independent.
Oh,
he's an independent cat.
Okay, got it.
It's a feral cat. What's wrong with you?
Sorry. Just want to remind everyone that coming up on July 15th, we are doing our first ever live podcast, which is to say with a live audience. Not we've recorded live shows before. We've streamed live shows before. But we're doing a show in front of a live audience at the Elk Grove Cinema in Elk Grove, Illinois. We're showing Back to the Future, and then we're going to record our 500th episode. You can go to our website or go to our Twitter. We're at FThisMovie, and our pinned tweet will take you to the link to buy tickets.
Everybody come. Bring somebody. Bring your friends. Bring your family. It'll be a good time.
Tickets are $5. You get
a
movie and a show.
A
you cannot beat it. We're really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
I certainly hope so. Mark, on, have you seen anything good lately?
Couple things. I saw this small independent movie called Endgame, Avengers Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys already talked about it. So,
did you like it?
I did like it. I was thoroughly entertained.
Thoroughly entertained?
Thoroughly entertained.
I like what you did there.
Yeah. Yeah. I regret that now. we can edit that out, right?
Mm-hmm.
No? Okay.
We're keeping it in. I can't believe you weren't quoted in the poster. Thoroughly entertaining.
Are there
Mark
still posters? Do they still put quotes on posters?
I guess newspaper ads, but there aren't any
newspapers
anymore. Yeah, exactly.
We're screwed.
I guess in YouTube ads, maybe.
Yeah. Hey, they can put this on the DVD box.
There you go.
No more
DVD.
That's fine. No, it was great. It was super fun. It was highly entertaining.
Yeah.
I want to watch it again, but I don't know like when to go find the time to go watch it.
You're going
to
go back with the new footage.
Oh, I didn't hear you. Tell me about the new footage.
I don't know much about it.
Sorry,
just that they're re-releasing it with new footage, mostly in a naked attempt to overtake Avatar as the most successful movie ever made.
How do you feel about it overtaking Avatar?
I don't feel good about it.
Okay.
I don't feel good about it.
Okay.
Because I think I talked about this maybe on last week's show.
Yeah, I think with JB, maybe.
That Avatar is, for all of its faults, an original property. And Avengers Endgame is the 22nd or 23rd right. sequel in a series.
Right.
And so it has an unfair advantage.
Sure. You're just sticking up for your guy. You're
of course I am.
I'm sticking up for Avatar.
Of course.
You don't want to be Heathcliff. You want to be Garfield.
That's right.
That's what it ends up
I see
being.
You, James Cameron. I see you. I'm thoroughly pissed.
I'm thoroughly pissed that he's never going to make another Avatar
yeah.
movie.
Oh, well, apparently again. Not. Yeah.
It's like his grad school. Like, he'll just be like, oh, yeah, I'm totally going to pay back these loans. Nope, he's just going to keep going to grad school.
He's
going to
keep announcing that Avatar 2 is coming and then pushing a date back.
It's way more fun just to keep announcing things. It's a good time.
I guess. Is anyone going to care when it comes out 15 years after the first movie?
I think when Charlie takes over F this movie.
Yeah.
Then he'll get to review it and it'll be
okay. I like
great.
It. Yeah.
You know,
he might be a fan. He hasn't seen the original yet, though.
Oh.
No.
I feel like he'd like it.
Maybe. It's kind of long.
He's kind of into it. Sure. Yeah. But, like, you know, he could have snacks. Like, there's, like, flying stuff. Spoilers for Avatar, everybody.
Yeah.
It's like another planet. He's into that
maybe,
world building.
Maybe, you know,
it.
We're going to Disney in September, and we're going to ride the Avatar ride because it's my dream. So maybe I'll show it to him either before we go or after once he takes an interest. Like, see, remember that fun ride we went on where it felt like you were a Navi circling home tree?
Sure. And you're trying to defend the unobtainium?
Yes, exactly. We were trying to defend your unobtainium on Pandora. Remember? Let's watch the movie where that happens now.
Yep. See you in a decade. Just bunker down in the basement.
So I believe they're re-releasing Avengers Endgame with additional footage.
Okay. I guess I'll go see it. I can make some time later in the summer. I do want to see it again, but I think the additional footage won't be the main reason why I go, but at least I'll be like, well, it's
I feel like the
time.
Additional footage will be included on the Blu-ray, so I'll just see it then.
That's fine.
Yeah.
How much additional footage is there?
I'm not really sure.
Because if it's 2 minutes, then someone should get punched in the face.
Yeah. I don't know how much.
Okay. That's fine.
I'm sure they announced it. I'm only reporting secondhand information at this point.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I trust you, though. I don't trust
Thank
them.
You.
I watched John Wick 3.
You said Parabellum. It like Jean Wick, Jean which Wick. Makes it sound very French.
I would watch that version as
it's
well.
A Luc Besson version. Jean Wick.
That means it would be the visuals would be spectacular and the plot would not make any sense.
He just keeps making movies about a female assassin.
Right, in a near dystopian future.
Like, his new one came out. Did anybody even realize that?
I did see that, and you were the first person I thought of, and then after about 0.7 seconds, I stopped thinking about it.
I can't remember the name of it.
No, I can't. There's no point.
Angela.
No, because there's...
Kate. Susan.
Hannah? It's Hannah.
It's not Hannah. That
it's
was a different
Anna.
Movie. It's Anna. You're right, it is Anna. Wow.
Which is garbage, because there's a movie called Hannah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of... The same plot, but slightly more interesting.
This is basically La Femme Nikita, right?
Also,
La Femme
last
Anna.
Year, yeah. Also, last year, there was Red Sparrow. So why is there this movie now?
And what was his last movie with Scarlett Johansson getting all the intelligence?
I don't know. Oh, Lucy.
Lucy.
I don't get it.
Whatever.
He's got a type.
He does have a type.
It's his thing that he wants to do. So it's Jean Wick.
Jean Wick.
3.
Okay.
Which was fantastic.
Yeah,
and I kind of want to go. I saw it twice, and I kind of want to go see it a third time.
Worth it just for the knife fight.
It is. It's worth it just to see Mark Dacascos, because that was wonderful when he appeared. I didn't realize he was in it, because I think I was a little bit overhyped when I was watching the trailer. And I was like, oh, wait, it is Mark Dacascos. I thought it was.
Right.
But then that was great. Yeah, whatever. I don't need to sell John Wick 3. The people who want to see it are going to go see it. Or they've seen it already. It's still in theaters. I might go see it again.
It's pretty good.
I loved it, man.
I like it.
I don't know.
Can you rank the John Wick movies?
I don't want to rank the John Wick 3 movies.
Okay.
I said the John Wick 3 movies. It doesn't make any sense. They keep getting bigger.
Okay.
I think I like the first one because it's...
the most grounded?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second one kind of gets... You know, the second and third ones kind of get bigger and crazier, but in a way that I don't mind.
No, I don't either. Yeah, like, we're purely in weird assassin land now.
Right, where everyone's an
assassin. I don't really care, right.
Where the entire city of New
York. You have to cross a desert just to find the head assassin.
there's nowhere left for him to go.
I guess.
Space?
Maybe. I would see that.
Sure. John Wick in space. A John Wick 4.
They did already announce a 4.
They did.
Which I'm ready for, based on where 3 leaves off.
I would pay a lot of money, like right now, to go to see it.
Yeah.
That's,
or you could just wait and pay the regular amount.
Right. That's probably a lie, because I said a lot of money. But then I was like, nah, it actually isn't that much money. It's like maybe $150.
Okay. That would not cover the film's budget.
No, probably.
Those movies cost more than that.
Well, if you get enough people like me.
Each paying $150? Now we're just kickstarting John Wick 4.
Or Avatar 2.
Oh, let's kickstart Avatar 2.
Let's not kick Avatar. No.
We're trying to raise $10,000, guys, to make Avatar 2.
It's for like 30 seconds of Avatar 2.
I don't even think that would do it. I don't think it would cover. $10,000 wouldn't even cover the 30 seconds.
Yeah. The last one I want to mention, and it's related to today because we're doing a Danny Boyle film.
Yeah, we are.
Adam Riskin and I saw yesterday at the Chicago Film Critics Festival.
Yes.
About a month ago. And I don't want to say too much about it, obviously, because is it coming out this weekend?
I believe so.
So I don't want to say too much about it, but it's fun.
Okay.
It's fun. It's super fun. The premise is, what if there's a world where, like, everyone forgot about Beatles songs, except for one particular person? I don't feel like that's a spoiler.
Such a weird premise for a movie.
Sure. It's fun. I could see how you're sitting around and you're having a conversation, then you come up with an idea. And so that's the premise of the movie, and it's fun. It's highly entertaining. It's got, I don't know the main actor's name, but it does have Lily James in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Lily James is always great. So it's a good time. I would recommend people. And it's great just listening to Beatles songs at, you know, theater-level stereo sound systems.
Right.
And that's always a good time. Although Adam did make the comment of, like, he didn't understand when people left the theater, like, early before the credits are over. Because it's like, when do you ever get to listen to Beatles song, like, this loud? You don't get to listen to it this loud at your house. Like, why don't you just stick around? Anyway, it was a good time. I think when we saw it, too, was cool because that was the first screening of it, even for the Music Box people.
Yeah.
They hadn't seen it before. They're like, we're sitting down and watching it with you guys for the first time. So it was pretty cool to kind of see it for the first time in Chicago. So everyone should go check it out. It's a good time.
And it played well with a crowd, I'm guessing.
Yeah, absolutely.
The trailers make it seem pretty crowd-pleasy.
Yeah, it's a good summer light entertainment. You know, it's not saying these deep.
Did you see Rocket Man?
I didn't see Rocket Man.
Okay, I'm just wondering if people have to choose between the two.
Oh no, how can you choose?
What do they go with?
Did you see John Wick 3?
I did see Rocket Man.
Yeah, John Wick 3. Yeah.
I liked Rocket Man.
John Wick 3.
Yeah, I was surprised that I liked Rocket Man because I was ready to not like Rocket Man because of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Right.
But it's a way better movie. And, won't be nominated for Best Picture, and Taron Egerton won't be nominated for Best Actor, nor will he win Best Actor like Rami Malek did. But he actually sings all of his own songs and gives a very good performance that will go unnoticed because Bohemian Rhapsody poisoned the well.
Well,
what can you do?
You live and you learn.
Yeah.
Which is what you do. What have you been watching?
I saw Toy Story 4. Which is the fourth film in the Toy Story franchise.
Oh, there's four of them now.
Yeah, now they're up to number 4. It's been 9 years since we had a Toy Story movie. I'll just say the Toy Story movies are my favorite Pixar movies. Toy Story 2 still being my favorite of all Pixar's. I liked Toy Story 4 a lot. I thought it was very entertaining. I thought it had a lot of heart. I thought it was very funny. It might be the funniest. Certainly since 2, it might be the funniest of all of them. But I also think they all kind of repeat themselves. Sure. Like, they keep saying the same things about the function of toys, the function of play, childhood ending, the passage of time. They all are kind of saying, like, there was that 90-second When She Loved Me bit in Toy Story 2, the Sarah McLachlan song, about the little girl growing up with the Jessie doll that, like, said everything that needs to be said on that subject. Right. And then Toy Story 3 adapted that to feature length. And sure. Toy Story 4 has some of that, but goes a little bit more broadly comic in the way that, like, there's some stuff in Finding Dory that I don't love, like fish driving cars.
Right.
And you get some of that in Toy Story 4, where, like, they're interacting with humans a lot. I thought the whole rule was, like, if...
Right, you're not supposed to.
They're not supposed to, but they're, like,
saying things that humans can hear, and they're driving cars and they're doing all kinds of stuff. That
sure.
So what I'm saying is not enough realism in Toy Story 4. I wanted it more grounded and gritty. No, it's good. And again, shouldn't be, because we're on the fourth one by now.
Right.
But I thought it was very entertaining.
I feel like I have a confession to make as well. The only Toy Story movie I've seen is Toy Story, the first one.
Oh.
I haven't seen 2, 3,
You're
or 4.
Missing out.
I know. I was watching John Wick 3 too many times. But I feel like I'm thinking about...
I am sinking. I'm back. That's what John Wick says.
It's not just a puppy.
I killed your chien. Oh, no. Mon chien. Il est mort. I'm speaking French, everyone. I have many depths that you don't know about.
Yeah, like an onion. Like a French, like a dirty, dirty French
like onion. Like a French onion. Like soup.
Are you sure you can't cut some of this out?
I'm going to cut this whole segment out.
We're just going to restart.
Yeah.
But it feels like a lot of the Pixar movies, I don't want to say all, but has to do with, like, so in Toy Story, it's like the toys get separated from the owner.
Oh, that's whole plot.
But that's
like we can't leave a toy behind. Right, that feels like movies they've done that.
Right, what a bunch of, you're so forgetful. But it feels like all the Pixar movies are like that as well, right? Where like there's this, you've lost something.
Right.
You know, like your son.
We have to find so-and-so.
We've lost our kid.
Right.
We've lost our powers.
Right.
We've lost our toys. And I think that pattern kind of... They're still good, obviously.
I
like Pixar movies, but at a point, I'm like, I don't know. I feel like...
Right. We've been separated and have to get back to the group.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, that is a lot of Pixar movies. It is Toy Story 4 as well.
Yeah.
But again, very entertaining
yeah.
Compared to something like The Secret Life of Pets 2, which is about as forgettable as movies come. I'll take a Toy Story 4 any day of the week. What else did I see? I saw The Parent Trap for the first time, the original 1961 Parent Trap.
Haley Mills.
With Haley Mills.
That's so funny. How'd you
acting
run into that?
Opposite Haley Mills. Erica wanted to show it to our kids, and it was Kids Day for Junesploitation, and rather than watching like a killer kid movie, we just watched an actual children's film.
Yeah.
So we watched The Parent Trap, and it's very cute and very charming.
Super fun.
It's over 2 hours. Which, there's no excuse for that. We went with that over Pollyanna, because Pollyanna is 5 or 10 minutes longer. And I just was not in the mood for a 2-hour and 15-minute children's film.
And it's very...
I saved that for Avatar.
Yeah.
That's my Avatar running time.
Avatar. is it the French version? I think that's when I first watched it. Like, as a kid, we had the Disney Channel. And then, you know, Disney has this whole entire backlog of these 90 minute to 2 hour movies that like no one, like it was just inside of like the Disney ecosystem kind of, right?
Yeah.
It's like all those Kurt Russell movies when he was like a teenager and that.
Yeah, all their live action stuff from like the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. And even as a kid, you know, I felt like I had seen, like knew what movies were out in theaters or were tried to be aware of it. But then all these Disney movies were on our television. I'm like, I've never heard of this.
Yeah.
But it's like a full length. It's like a whole thing, and so that's fun.
Yeah.
And they liked it. The kids liked it.
They liked it enough. They kind of lost interest, if I'm being honest.
Sure.
But they lose interest in a lot of things. Unless we're seeing stuff at the theater, it's hard to get them to really... There's too many things at home competing for their attention.
Yeah. Home's way more fun.
Yeah. And sometimes if we're watching a movie down here, the thing competing for like our daughter's attention is just the attention of everyone else.
Sure.
So it's like, wait, if I stand in front of the screen where everyone's looking and dance around,
right?
Technically everyone's watching me.
Right.
Let me do that.
Right.
And she does.
That's your kid, by the way.
Yeah.
Everybody knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how she is.
That's your kid.
Saw a couple movies at Cinepocalypse that I haven't talked about yet. Satanic Panic, which is the new movie from Chelsea Stardust, which is really fun in like kind of a throwback 80s way. And I don't mean that in the obnoxious, like there's a synth score and they made it look old. It's just,
they're wearing light wash jeans.
The horror comedies that you like from the 80s, the really over the top ones. This one captures that same vibe. And that comes out in September, I think. So people should look for that. Actually, she announced that it comes out the same day as It Chapter 2.
Oh.
So go see that in the theater and then come home and rent Satanic Panic on VOD.
I feel like that's a mistake.
Well, she has no control over it. I guess so.
You can't move it a week.
That's right. You would think. I saw the R-rated gore cut of Tammy and the T-Rex. So I don't know. You probably didn't hear the show. Erica and I watched Tammy and the T-Rex several weeks back. This is the 1994 movie from the director of Mac and Me, starring Paul Walker as a high schooler who's in love with Denise Richards in her first role. And
who wouldn't be in love with Denise Richards?
He is beaten nearly to death and then attacked by a lion and goes into a coma, at which point Terry Kaiser, a.k.a. Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's, who's playing a mad scientist, performs an operation on him, removes his brain, and puts it in the body of a robotic Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Fantastic.
And now the Tyrannosaurus Rex with Paul Walker's brain is still in love with Denise Richards.
Of course.
And so he's trying to communicate to her, hey, it's me, Paul Walker.
Right.
I'm still in love with you. She's still in love with him. So they try to make it work as a high school girl and a Tyrannosaurus Rex. It was shot as an R-rated like horror comedy.
Sure.
And then they cut all that stuff out to make it more family friendly. So it's just this dumb movie about a girl and a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So this was the 35mm world premiere of the gore cut, where every time the Tyrannosaurus Rex now attacks someone, he's disemboweling people and ripping their heads off and smashing them under cars and flattening them. And it's really, really bloody and crazy, and it just makes you ask, who is this movie for?
Right.
Because when it was an idiotic PG-13 comedy, it was like, I get it, they're trying to trick someone into watching this on Comedy Central. But then when you add in all this violence and stuff, it feels like you're negating your comedy audience,
right?
But the horror fans aren't going to go for all the comedy. So it's this weird. It gets a Blu-ray release later this year. I encourage everyone to watch it. Although I heard someone say the next day I was in line for something at Cinepocalypse, and I was behind some people who had seen it, and they said something along the lines of, once I saw it with all the gore and stuff, I knew that the filmmakers were in on the joke. And then it lost all of its appeal for me. So he was only able to enjoy it sort of ironically as this thing that was bad on accident. Once he found out that the filmmakers knew that they were making this goofy, stupid movie, he could no longer enjoy the movie, which I thought was really interesting.
He didn't like that he was reversed, that he was forced to reverse his position of where he was as an audience.
He liked it when he could feel superior to it. And then once he found out that the movie's in on the joke, now he can't feel superior to it anymore and doesn't like it.
Is he maybe illiterate?
I don't know.
Maybe
I didn't ask him to spell or write anything.
Sir, can you
which
sign your,
I'll
can
admit
you sign
was a
your
mistake
name?
On my part.
Yeah.
What if he just wrote like an X or something?
Right.
And then
it's like, oh, shit. Which way is the X? Set upside down? I don't know. I'm not sure.
But it was a crazy movie, and I encourage everyone to check it out.
The small detail that I really enjoyed about you retelling that, which I'm thankful for, by the way, is that it's the world premiere of the gore cut, because nothing says quality like world premiere.
World premiere gore cut. And it's the only time that 35mm print is actually going to screen. Because
are they burning it immediately?
No, it was from a private collector who is not going to loan it out anymore. Luckily, the American Genre Film Archive, AGFA, did a 2K or possibly a 4K restoration of the film. So there is a DCP that's floating around that will continue to screen. And if you have a chance to see it with an audience, that's really the way to see it.
It sounds like a really good midnight movie.
Yeah, for sure. And then, like I said, it's supposed to get a Blu-ray release later this year.
World premiere Blu-ray release.
World premiere of Tammy and the T-Rex R-rated gore cut. That's
take,
a thing.
Take a number.
It exists. I saw it. It was a good time.
Jean-Wick.
Let's talk about 28 Days Later.
Let's do it, man. I got a question for you immediately.
Let's have it.
Because you were doing this for video.
Yeah,
Shot on Video Day.
Yeah.
Why did... I don't know, so I'm asking you.
Probably don't either.
Okay, that's fine. We'll talk about it. Why did Danny Boyle shoot it on video?
I think it was because it allowed them to do things that regular cameras couldn't do in terms of where they could put the cameras. It allowed them to shoot faster and more cheaply. So there are those sequences where they have to clear out parts of London.
Yeah.
And if they're doing that with a full
setup.
Film crew and setup, yeah. You're talking about an entire day, whereas they can attach a couple cameras to buildings or bridges and shoot it all, you know, close a street for a few minutes and get the shot. I think that's a big part of it.
Okay.
Does the video aesthetic have an impact on how you watch the film?
I think so, because when... This made me go back into, like, which Danny Boyle movies I'd seen. And I think...
Yesterday. We know you've seen Yesterday.
I saw Yesterday, but I can't talk about it. I'm sworn to secrecy. Everybody go see it. I think what I remember about Danny Boyle movies is that there's always, like, a particular... Not a particular look that goes across movies, but there's always like something he's doing. Like
okay.
Train Spotting, from my memory of it's been a long time since I've seen Train Spotting.
Wow.
It's been, yeah. But that had a very particular look to it. This movie has a particular look to it. Slumdog Millionaire has a particular look to it. And so I was like, oh, maybe that's just this thing that he does for every movie that he takes on. He has a particular look for it instead of like this universal thing that he does for every single movie. Like, I don't know, like Wes Anderson always makes a Wes Anderson movie.
Right.
I don't know. It kind of like, you know, it's like an early 2000s movie. So I think it kind of fit in with, you know, the advent of the 24-hour news cycle. And like, it's supposed to be this world, like this countrywide epidemic that, you know, and like the news reports or like, you know, radio broadcasts and stuff. It's like a big part of the movie. And so I think it kind of like the graininess of the video or whatever definitely fit in with that, you know, it like it fit in with the early 2000s. I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to wrap my head around that too. Like, what is it that I'm reacting to in the aesthetic? Because when you do found footage in video, it's like our brains are trained to process that as being real.
Right.
And film as being a construct.
Yeah.
And but I don't know that I'm necessarily processing 28 Days Later as being more real because it's shot on video, but it does give the movie a totally different kind of vibe than had they. I'm thinking about like some of the more striking shots when they're in the tunnel and he just shoots the shadows of the infected coming towards them against the wall. And I think while that would be very striking on film, it would feel more like, this thing that a crew set up and storyboarded as opposed to a thing that was just captured.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe the difference for me, is that the whole movie feels captured instead of constructed, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Okay. Well, I think it's also the video part makes it feel like it is an archive, right? That this is a thing that we found.
Right.
And like you could sort of do the mental experiment of like, oh, this is... Like this is a document of like, right. It's like, so of the time, right. Early 2000s. Like if this actually happened, I mean, aside from the rage virus thing, everything is like of its time. There's nothing like super futuristic. There's nothing super antiquated about anything.
Right.
And so it definitely feels of that time. And so, I don't know, it kind of takes me back in that sort of thing.
Is this the movie that reignites the zombie craze that we're still living in 17 years later?
Do you feel like it's still a craze?
Kind of.
I kind of feel like it's over.
It's definitely on its way out, I think. Like, it has crested.
Yeah.
But I do think we're still living in it. I mean, Walking Dead is still a going concern.
Yeah.
If you follow, you know, indie horror, you get 25 bad zombie movies a year. Zombieland 2 is on its way. We just had Jim Jarmusch doing zombies and proving that he had nothing new to say about them.
Like, this is a thing.
Yeah. Oh, you guys like zombies? I can do zombies, man.
Yeah, zombies are pretty easy, right?
Right.
Okay, we'll do that.
So it's still going. But yeah, I agree with you that it's definitely... It feels over, even if I think pop culture at large hasn't yet accepted that it's over.
Well, I think part of the reason why it feels like it's over is that this story in particular, like, there's not a lot of zombie stuff, right, of them, like, actually fighting them off or whatever. Like, most of the movie, like, 95% of the movie is them, like, trying to get away from them or, like, hold up in a building somewhere, or them talking to, like, the characters talking to each other. It's not them fighting off whatever, but from I don't watch Walking Dead or Fear of the Walking Dead.
Oh, you're missing out.
Oh, when
just
I talk
kidding.
To what show my poor.
You're fine.
But when I talk to my friends who do watch it, they say like, "Oh, it's just, you know, it's just them." No, it's to the point now where the characters are just like, it's just pew 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 pew, and they're just, you know, like shovel hitting zombies every week. And like when I think about this and I contrast that to this movie, and this movie is like not about the fighting part, you know, actually there's more fighting of the people amongst themselves than there is of them fighting the zombies actually. And so I think that's kind of why the zombie thing is maybe crusted, because it's like, well, when you just have another mindless enemy to fight off, then that doesn't make it different than every other like sort of CG, like any other kind of movie that is like these CG sort of mindless drones, armies of drone, mindless kind of enemies you need to fight off. And I think that's why this one kind of sticks out a little bit.
Well, the advantage of the zombie as the mindless enemy is that you can be really inventive and gory in terms of how you dispatch them or how they dispatch humans. Yeah, you know, The Walking Dead, if you listen to anyone on that show when they're interviewed, or Robert Kirkman or whatever, they'll always say, like, well, the reason that the show is so successful is because it's not about the zombies at all. It's about the characters. Like, it's this talking point that they've been given. It's about the characters. Meanwhile, there's maybe, like, one interesting character on that show and has ever been. Maybe one, two, three interesting characters on that show. So if you're going to tell me that this show is the most successful show on TV because people love those characters, I call bullshit. People love the show because it's really gross and, like, has some amazing zombie effects. I remember the summer that Terminator 2 Judgment Day came out as being one of the very best movie summers of my life. My brother took my friend and me on opening day, first show, first day, and we sat in the theater, our eyes glued to the screen. The audience was going nuts, standing up and cheering for every cool thing that happened in that movie. It's one of the best movie experiences of my life. And speaking of summer movies and speaking of sequels, that's right, I'm talking about the Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers 2019 Summer of Sequels. Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers is one of my favorite movie podcasts because it's got hosts Dion and Blake hanging out, talking about the kinds of movies that I grew up loving, movies that you used to watch during sleepovers. They talk about more recent movies too, but this summer they're devoting their entire summer specifically to some of the biggest sequels to some of the best loved franchises of all time. Their Terminator show is already up, and it's really, really fun. They don't just talk about the movie, although they talk about it in the way that they usually do, which is like funny and smart and entertaining. It's not all highbrow and pretentious. It's the way you hang out and talk about movies with your friends. You know, if you like our show, they talk about movies in a very similar way. But they don't just talk about the movie Terminator 2 on the episode. They're talking about the Guns N' Roses song. They're talking about the Universal ride that was spun off of it, the 3D ride. They're talking about the toy line, which is, you know, a toy line for a rated R movie, which is pretty unheard of. They cover the whole Terminator 2 experience as only they can. I can't wait to find out what other sequels they're going to be doing in this very special summer series. In the past, they've talked about all kinds of movies from Raiders of the Lost Ark to Scream to Rear Window to Cruising to The Warriors to Adventures in Babysitting to The Karate Kid. One of my absolute favorites, the Star Wars Holiday Special. They talk about all different kinds of movies in that really, really fun, nostalgic way. And it's just a blast to listen to. You guys should all check out Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers, especially this summer, because they're going to be talking about some really, really cool sequels. I'm excited to hear what they say. Make sure that you check out Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers at SaturdayNightMovieSleepovers.com, or just go right ahead and subscribe like I did. You can listen on Stitcher, on Apple Podcasts, on iTunes. I just went ahead and subscribed, and so should you. It's the Saturday Night Movie Sleepovers 2019 Summer of Sequels. Check it out. 28 Days Later. Well, first, okay. I want to compare it to Dawn of the Dead because structurally it's almost the exact same.
Sure.
But a lot of people will push back and say, this isn't a zombie movie. Is this a zombie movie?
Oh, because like technically they're not zombies.
Correct. They're just infected, living.
Right. So I think this is where it kind of blends that science fiction and horror, right? It kind of like, which one is it? I don't I don't think it matters to me which one it is necessarily, but I can see why someone would push back. I would just call it a zombie movie because it's like, for all intents and purposes, like, I know it's technically different because, like, it's a medical thing that may turn them into that. But for all intents and purposes, it's a zombie because whatever the person was before, that person is no longer there, and it's a reanimated whatever. And if it's reanimated by some, you know, supernatural force or some sort of weird virus, I think either way it's a zombie thing.
But. Well, and they exist to attack and bite, and then the bite transfers the virus, and then if you are bit, you become the thing, and that's how it spreads. I mean, that's my feeling too, is, you know, people will say it's not a zombie movie, it's, you know, because they're infected, but it uses all the language of a zombie movie, visual language, except they're fast, you know. But even 2 years later, we had Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, where we had running zombies in that too. And that was this movie's sort of big novelty, was what if zombies could run and were like quick as hell. And it does make it scarier than just the sort of shuffling George Romero zombie.
For sure.
But it uses the exact structure of Dawn of the Dead, which is like sort of confusion and outbreak in the beginning. Our band of survivors comes together. Then there's a long stretch in the middle with no zombies. It's just about their day-to-day, like how they live, how they form this sort of family unit. And then we get the last act where there's an external threat that is human, because that's every zombie movie too. It's like, the humans are worse than the zombies, man. I mean, we're the Walking Dead, man. Dave's not here. And then we throw the zombies into that mix, and it's just sort of chaos. I mean, it's almost beat for beat the structure of Dawn of the Dead. So to say that it is not a zombie movie, to me, seems a bit disingenuous.
It seems like splitting too fine of a hair, I think, for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
You might have read this thing too, but with the advent of the, or like the repopularization of zombie stuff, apparently Alex Garland, when he was writing the script for this, he was inspired by playing the Resident Evil video games.
Which I never played.
Have you never been to Dave & Buster's?
I don't think I have, actually, to tell you the truth.
Have you never had a roll of $5 worth of quarters that you just needed to burn? Because welcome to my life. No, so it's just a shoot 'em up. I mean, it's basically Fear the Walking Dead, is from what I hear about Fear the Walking Dead. It's just a video game where it's a shooter. You have the actual like plastic gun that you fire into the screen, and then you just...
I played a Rambo game that was like that.
It's pretty much that.
Yeah.
Except Rambo's Hunting Zombies. Rambo Hunting Zombies, by the way, is a movie I would watch.
I'm guessing that's the new Rambo, right?
And a video game I would
play. The new Rambo at one point was going to be like, he was going to fight like the Predator, basically.
That's fantastic.
A couple years ago when they first pitched it, it was like Rambo's going to fight an alien invader.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's where we all thought that series would go.
Yeah, I'm here for
when
it.
When we watched First Blood.
I'm here for it. Yeah. just blend all the 1980s IP together.
Right. Yes.
And call it Expendables Z.
But instead...
Predator.
I haven't watched the trailer. Have you watched the trailer for
not.
The new Rambo?
No, I haven't.
Last Blood, I believe it's called. Do you see what they did? Because before...
Like, Last Blood, get out of here.
They spent 7 seconds thinking of that. Okay.
Okay. A whole seven.
Yeah. Maybe. I might be generous with that.
So is he dead? Because that's his last blood.
Again, I haven't watched the trailer. I saw still images of him in a cowboy hat, and he has short hair, and I'm like, that's not Rambo. Rambo doesn't have short hair and a cowboy hat.
No.
So I don't know. I don't know what to expect.
I thought you said he was, just for a second, I thought you said he was wearing shorts. And I was like,
he should be wearing shorts.
Rambo doesn't wear
movie.
Shorts.
Yeah.
Rambo doesn't wear shorts. No one should wear shorts and a cowboy hat, by the way. That's just it's a life tip.
Tell that to
saying.
Daisy Duke.
Right. No, that's okay. What was I talking about? Resident Evil.
Yeah.
So it's just a game. It's like a dark, I think kind of it was popular at the time because it was sort of like a darker like environment inside of the game. So you couldn't really like see what you were shooting, because I feel like most of the shooter games up at that point, you could kind of like see the thing off in the distance.
Right.
And so it was less scary. This one had like, you know, monsters popping out at you. But I just think it's funny that this and there's nothing super complicated about the game either. But then Alex Garland, I remember, I imagine a young Alex Garland as a teenager, like, or like in his 20s, like, oh yeah, I should just make a movie about this, which I think is kind of funny. Anyway, and then this is what it came up with, which I think is really good.
Well, nobody had done like really scary zombies for a while because the Romero movies had run their course by 85, and then we don't really get zombies in the 90s at all. And even Romero's movies, you know, you could argue were more about being political allegories than they were trying to be scary.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that Resident Evil as a game tries to be scary.
Yeah.
So I could see him playing it and saying like, oh, hey, what if we did zombies, but scary and intense and visceral and quick. And the video aesthetic, too, like, does make it a little bit... It does obscure certain things. And part of that is the cutting, because the movie is cut really fast.
Yeah.
Sure. But, yeah, you can't... It's a little bit smeary, and you can't always make out exactly what you're seeing, which kind of helps, too, I think.
Yeah. Two things I really liked about it was that... I know Brendan Gleeson is I think even back then was it like a known, not like a famous guy, but he was
pretty known, right?
He's a known actor. But apparently Boyle deliberately tried to cast people who were relative unknowns or that people wouldn't have seen before. So there was no expectation for like where the story was going to go. So I like that part of it. I also really like Naomi Harris's character. I forget what her name is in the movies. It's Selena.
Something I think.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like her because I think there's something really easy to, it'd be really easy to dislike her, right? To say like, oh, well, she seems overly, spoilers for 28 Days Later, by the way. This is an old movie, but whatever, it's fine. We've been spoiling it this whole time. But I think it's easy to dislike her because she's like sort of not emotional and like sort of abrasive and tough and like, you know, you have to... Like, seems like a selfish kind of survivalist sort of character. But I like her a lot. I actually feel like that's... there's so many of these movies that I watch. I don't, you know, and I don't watch, like, a ton of zombie movies. But there's so many movies that you watch, and you're like, why is everyone so stupid? You know, why are people acting like idiots? And then she's not. She's not stupid. She's made the choice out of a place that makes sense to her. It's, like, a really rational choice that she decides to have this kind of attitude. And so, yeah, I like it a lot. I like her character a lot.
Well, and she and Cillian Murphy have an interesting conversation where she sort of explains the difference between existing and living. And, oh, there is more to live for than just surviving. Which is interesting because that's a question that I've always had watching The Walking Dead. And, again, it speaks to my own pessimism and my own just willingness to give up. But I watch The Walking Dead and I'm like, what are they fighting for? Like, this seems really hard. And for what? And if it was me, I would have checked out, like...
Right.
10 minutes into the zombie apocalypse. Just the first trash can fire I see.
I see where this is going. Yeah,
I am just taking myself out.
Yeah.
Because the trash can fire is always the first sign of the apocalypse.
Right.
So I don't think that show has ever really answered that question, you know. And it came up. Did you see A Quiet Place?
I did, yeah.
It came up a lot during A Quiet Place when everyone was like making fun of them for having a baby. And I thought, well, if they're not going to have a baby, what's the point?
There's no hope.
Exactly. Right. If it's just, okay, there's the four of us, and then that's it. I thought the whole point of the baby was that there's hope for the future. So that bothered me. That complaint bothered me. And I feel like this movie has that conversation and at least has her come to a realization after they meet Brendan Gleeson and his daughter that, like, oh, there's maybe more than just surviving. It's possible to find happiness even in this. And it's weird because, you know, I forget the title of the movie until Christopher Eccleston late in the movie talks about, you know, 4 weeks ago. I was like, oh, that's right. I feel like this has been 4 years and they've been living in this wasteland.
Yeah, it's just been a couple weeks.
Right. It's been like, it was a week before Tuesday. Everybody was fine. I forget the title of the film.
Yeah.
Stupidly.
But the thing you're talking about with hope is in A Quiet Place is also, that comes up in this movie too, you know, that... The army commander, his guy, and even though he's sort of positioned as the villain, at the same time you can kind of see why he acts the way that he did. He's not proud. What I sense from that character is that he's not proud that, you know, he has to do this. But I mean, I was thinking the same thing too. I mean, for you it's trash can fires, but for me it's like, if I'm if I'm in that position, if you're in a position of authority over these like armed people, then I don't even know why those guys are listening to him. You know, like what's sure. like what's the point? Like, why should I listen to you? Like, I'm not going to shoot you necessarily or fight you, but it's like, well, do I really have to take your orders? Like, I don't know. The whole world's going to hell. Like, what's the point? So I think it makes him ultimately kind of sympathetic, right? That he's saying, like, look, I to keep these guys alive, I have to give them something to live for tomorrow. And so, and like, you know, the way that it gets there is not so, it's not so wholesome. But like, it makes sense, right?
You right. Have his yeah. offering is women.
Right.
Again, it's been 4 weeks. Like, really, guys?
Right, come on, get it together.
You hear that hard up after 4 weeks. Right. So you're just like, get us women or we riot.
Yeah. And but thanks for the drinking water, by
right.
the way.
Yeah, right.
Thanks for
right.
keeping us safe. But women or else, yeah.
We well, and again, because it's only been 4 weeks, the movie doesn't really address sort of the systemic breakdown that we might expect. So it makes sense to me that, like, everybody's still following orders because that's what they know.
Sure.
Again, not
sure.
to go back to Dawn of the Dead. One of my favorite shots in Dawn of the Dead is they're in this mall and it's completely empty. And at one point they go into a bank that's in a mall, you know, a mall bank.
Mall bank.
And they travel through the red velvet ropes to get to the yeah. to get to the counter. And it's this great moment of what slaves to habit we all are, you know, and that's what that whole movie's about. So to me, it makes sense, especially with it only being 4 weeks, that the military is still sort of. But yeah, he's living in fear of how long can I maintain control. Is he doing it because of that, or is he doing it because he genuinely wants to be looking out for his guys,
right?
Did you watch any of the alternate endings?
No, I wasn't aware of the alternate endings.
Okay, so I remember when the movie came out, they, after several weeks of release, they didn't re-release it because it was still playing, but they changed the ending. It was oh. like, now come see 28 Days Later with a different ending.
Oh.
And all the ending is Jim dies.
Oh, okay.
He gets shot, they escape the compound, they get to the hospital. And rather than him surviving, and we get the ending of them holding out the,
right,
the hello letters,
hello, yeah.
He dies. And it cuts. They leave the hospital. They say, what do we do? And Naomi Harris says, like, we continue, or we move on, or I don't know. And they walk away, and the movie fades to black, and that's the ending.
Do you feel like that makes a big difference?
I mean, not really.
I don't.
I mean, I don't know why it's a better movie with that ending. To me, it's a little bit worse of a movie, but that's because I tend to like more of a happy ending if it's even remotely earned.
Yeah.
And I think this movie earns it enough that it's not like we're discovered and everything's fine again and right. the outbreak is cured. But to have Jim completely sacrifice himself and kill him for that, I don't know. It seems
a little harsh,
bleak for its own sake.
Sure.
Then there's another alternate ending, and I don't know if it's a continuation of that beat. It's the exact same scene with the letters, only Jim's not there.
Okay.
So the implication being that he did die. So in both the alternate endings, he does not survive.
I think Jim's death would work better as like an indicator of like time having passed or something like
okay.
that. Right. That's like, oh, we're still like months later. A year later, we're still dealing with this because of what. Well, I don't want to get into the sequel, but like it would indicate passage of time. But I don't know if it necessarily changes anything. You're talking about the velvet rope thing. I always love the moment in zombie movies where they're like, you got to break into the store because mm-hmm. like you're hungry or you're like you're naked or you need shoes or something like that. And everyone does the thing where they like carefully tries the door
right.
and you get like initially right. discouraged because you're like, oh, it's locked. But then the character remembers, oh, right, it doesn't matter. Then they break into the right. store and then get what they need, which, you know, is kind of to your point about the velvet thing. Is this your, not that you have to have a favorite, but do you like Danny Boyle? That's one question. Second question is this your, what's your favorite Danny Boyle movie?
So that's a very good question.
Okay.
Because I don't know what makes a Danny Boyle movie.
Right. Right. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. And sometimes I'm like, is he a good director? He has to be a good director because he's made enough movies that I like.
Sure.
And I don't think a bad director could do that.
Right.
Even his worst movie, I don't know what that would be.
Well, I haven't seen all of them, so I don't know.
I think I've seen most of them. I don't know what his worst movie would be, but like, it's not a movie I hate. It's probably just like, well, that really wasn't totally for me, you know? Sure. Like, I don't love Slumdog Millionaire.
Right.
But it's fine, right. You know? It's when we laud it to the level of Best Picture, obviously it becomes a target. Shallow Grave is really good. Trainspotting.
Yeah. Haven't seen it.
Really good. I love A Life Less Ordinary. I'm a little bit alone on that limb. But I'm a big fan of it. And for a little while, it was like he was doing his take on a bunch of different genres. So yeah. His Life Less Ordinary is sort of his screwball comedy, and Shallow Grave is sort of his sort of a noir, and I don't know what Trainspotting would be, his drug movie.
Is that its own genre? Teenage,
right.
Like whatever, youth.
Sunshine, youth, his science fiction sci-fi, movie, yeah. is, I think, fucking great. Awesome.
Really good.
Yeah. 28 Days Later is his horror movie. Jobs is his biopic. Yesterday, which I haven't seen, is his musical.
Right.
127 Hours, I'm kind of indifferent on.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
The Beach, I think, is a big mess, but a sort of interesting mess.
Right. I feel like I need to see The Beach.
What am I forgetting?
There was never, I think Never Let Me Go was.
That's not him.
Maybe I'm wrong.
That's somebody else.
Oh, there's Trance.
Oh, Trance is a fucking mess.
Yeah.
But like,
I didn't remember that I saw Trance. And then I went back to look up what Trance was about. And then ironically, it's about having your memory manipulated. And then I felt stupid.
I think Trance is a fascinating mess.
I liked it, but I think the ending, it just, I don't know where it ends.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of.
That's a crazy, crazy movie. I haven't seen Millions. And I haven't seen T2, Trainspotting.
No, I didn't see that either.
Millions, I think, is sort of like his kids' movie.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, all of them. All right. I didn't forget too many of them. Not bad for going off the top of my head.
Yeah. I think to add on to what you're saying, I was trying to come up with he does seem to try to hit one of every single kind. But it feels like he's sort of a movie maker, like, of the moment. Like, whatever is kind of, like, current. Not that he necessarily like follows a trend or something like that, but he just sort of has a sense for what's going on now and like, oh, what would work now? Doing Yesterday, I think, works now in the sense of like, you know, there's so much nostalgia wrapped up into pop culture. And so that's kind of works that way. So when I think about him being someone of the moment, I think it makes sense when they signed him on to do the next Bond movie. In the Bond franchise, like how it's not going to work because like he's a guy of the moment, and there's something like Bond. I don't know. Maybe we'll take some criticism for this, but I just feel like Bond is like this. It's an institution,
right?
Right. If there's anything that isn't of the moment, it's like a franchise that has 25 movies in it.
Right.
Like it's, so it makes perfect sense to me why he would like, you know, kind of let himself go from that franchise. Cause like, there's no way that's going to like fit with like kind of what he does and how he does things.
So. He seemed like the wrong fit to me. I couldn't necessarily understand why. You're making a good case for why. But when it was announced, it didn't give me a ton of hope.
Yeah. Although I would have seen it. I'm like, interested in a Danny Boyle, James Bond movie.
Sure.
I'm interested in it.
I still just, I don't know who he is as a filmmaker. His movies have a certain energy, I think.
Yes.
And maybe that's what characterizes them. But other than that, there's not a specific.
Yeah, there's not like an idea.
Style. There's not an overriding idea. Yeah.
There's not like the same person that he works with all the time. Although he's worked with Alex Garland a couple of times.
Yeah.
Or more than once.
Yeah.
So.
My favorite Danny Boyle would probably be Sunshine.
Yeah.
Even if that movie has a bad last act, much the same way that 28 Days Later has kind of a bad last act.
Maybe it's Alex Garland's
fault. Maybe it's Alex Garland's fault. Absolutely.
Come on, Alex.
What is your favorite Danny Boyle movie?
I think I would say Sunshine as well, although this was... Okay, so this movie, 28 Days Later, was a movie I felt like... It's one of those movies I feel like I had seen, but couldn't tell you when I'd seen it, or if it was like with friends or at the theater. Or it could have been one of those things where I fooled myself into thinking that I had seen it because I'd just seen like 20-minute segments of it on TV or whatever.
Sure.
But I really like this one. Like, this would be pretty far up there as well.
Yeah,
I really like this one. It would be really good.
High up there. I would need to rewatch Trainspotting.
Yeah.
And I would put A Life Less Ordinary higher than most people because there's something very wrong with
me. The Mount Rushmore of Danny
Boyle.
But
I do love it. It would be on my Danny Boyle Mount Rushmore. Don't you worry. Ewan McGregor and Cameron Diaz singing Beyond the Sea would be right there.
That's pretty good, actually.
On my Boyle Rushmore.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I liked this movie. I was afraid it wouldn't hold up because I don't know that I had seen it since the theater. I've owned the DVD. I don't think I've ever watched it. Oh, so I wasn't sure how it would hold up, especially after 17 years of nonstop zombies.
Sure.
But I thought it held up really, really well.
Well, it's because it's about the people. It's not really...
It's about the characters.
It's about the characters.
Like The Walking Dead.
It's just about the characters.
I, too, love Naomi Harris. She's my favorite character in the movie. She gives my favorite performance. I remember even in 2002 being like, oh, my God, who is that? Like, put her in more movies. And then she ends up in the Bond franchise. So there you go. It all comes full circle.
Yeah.
My favorite moment of hers is very early on. She's been traveling with a guy who we meet, and he gets bit. And without a moment's hesitation, she murders the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And it just tells you right away, like, oh, she is not fucking around even a little bit.
No.
It's pretty incredible. There's not even a moment for him to be like, wait, she just starts hacking the shit out of him. Yeah.
Which leads to that point at the end. And again, I didn't remember this movie if I'd seen it before. And so when they get to the end, when the movie turns into like a haunted house thing, and Jim's running around and he's half naked.
Which is my least favorite stuff in the movie.
Sure. And he's running around, he's half naked, he's covered in blood because he's trying to rescue the two girls. And then he comes in, and then for sure, I thought Selena was going to kill him. I'm like, she's going to murder him
because
she thinks that he
steps up on her without saying like, hey, it's me, I'm Jim, I'm okay, I'm not infected. Like, she's ready to hack him.
Right.
And he just charges. I'm like, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you say, hey, don't kill me, just so you know, I'm okay, I'm not infected? Because she, you know, pauses a second before burying a machete in him because she sees that he's not infected. But like, I don't know, why take that risk? Right. Why not just be up front?
He has really
communication
large,
is key, Jim.
He has really large blue eyes,
right?
And just like in the
she
rest
could
of his
see
life,
that
right,
he's not infected.
He was just letting his large, charming blue eyes get him past the obstacles of his life. Like, can't you see? I have blue eyes. You're an idiot. Okay, so I went back and looked at other movies that Alex Garland had done.
Okay,
and then I didn't know The Beach was a novel, and it makes me want to go back and read it.
Seeing that movie on Valentine's Day alone and being surrounded by couples who were there because like it was DiCaprio's first movie post Titanic.
Yes.
And so it was a lot of couples me at the beach.
Yeah. You were the only person there for the right reason.
That's right.
Because everyone else.
I was like, I'm here to see the new Danny Boyle movie.
Yeah. What are you guys here for?
I'm not here for DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I'm here for Tilda Swinton.
And she wears her wedding dress out of the ocean. That reminds me of like Erica and I were talking about like Magic Mike, or just when Magic Mike came out, and then everybody was and it's like the analogous situation where like a lot of people were just really excited because Magic Mike just seemed to be like, you know, like a bachelorette party at the movies.
Yeah.
But then we were just like, oh, but we're here to see the new Soderbergh,
right?
But then that's not what everyone else.
Oh,
is
no.
here to
I
see.
I remember being there opening day and just being surrounded by.
Yep. Yeah.
Women out of their minds and just being like, okay.
And you know what? You got what you wanted, and they got
we
what
all
they wanted.
Came away
and
happy.
Everyone was happy. It brought movies, guys. It brought everyone together because of abs. I was just looking through Alex Garland's filmography. And so he did 28 Days, he did Sunshine. And then I forgot that he wrote Dread. And so I had to go back and rewatch
all of
Dread. I
might
to.
Have been an uncredited director on Dread.
That's what people were saying.
Yeah.
Man, I love the crap out of that movie.
It's really entertaining.
I really love Dread.
Yeah, I do too.
It's a good time.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to spread the good news about Dread.
I don't even think you have to. That's a movie that, like, I can't believe hasn't gotten a sequel with as much fan support as it has. It can't cost that much.
Right.
Carl Urban is like beating the drum for it loudly. Yeah. You would think that somehow they could scrounge up enough, like a Riddick style sequel.
I think I heard about that they're doing some sort of television series for it, is what I'm hearing.
All right.
Which isn't my favorite.
No.
Because I feel like the production value.
Right.
Like, you need, like, a movie budget to do this. I don't
right.
want, like...
And not even a high budget. I mean, that movie's, just, you know, one location, basically.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm okay with it. Like, you know, there's some good shows out of good... There's, I don't know if the BBC is doing it necessarily, but there's been some really good BBC shows that are, like, the short...
I'll take your word for it.
The three-episode, four-episode. Like, the, you know, Sherlock. You haven't seen Sherlock?
I saw, like, two episodes of Sherlock.
It was pretty good. Like,
yeah. All right, I mean, I think I liked it enough. I didn't continue. But.
That's fine. Like, three episodes, four episodes of Dread...
All right.
Dread 2050.
Sure.
I don't know what the title is.
I'll take it.
Right. Dread fighting Boba Fett. No, that's not it. Dread. That's Dread fighting John Wick. I would watch that. How do you feel about... I don't know if you wrote the review for this, but how did you feel about Annihilation?
I liked Annihilation a lot.
Okay. I had a hard time with it. I felt like I wanted to like it more, but I feel like Alex Garland is really good at putting things on screen or writing characters or writing things into a script that are like strange and abstract. And that's always off-putting, not in a way that I don't like it, but it takes me a while to sort of understand like what I'm seeing. And so an Annihilation was more like, I think Ex Machina, just as a comparison point, like the things are sort of like pretty fairly clear cut, like what ideas are kind of like
you can enjoy it as a narrative and not just as a metaphor, whereas Annihilation is like isn't as interested in you watching a narrative.
Doesn't give a shit about you,
right?
Doesn't care about you at all. I was reading interviews with him about Annihilation. I don't know why this has turned into Annihilation Cast. I apologize, everyone. But then so Garland read this novel. There's a novel called Annihilation by Jeff Vandermeer or something like that. And then he adapted it, but he didn't go back to read the novel. He just wrote a treatment based on his memory of having
read
the book, which I was like,
I kind of like that.
Right. Are you like super competent or is that like you're just so it's just this really loose adaptation?
Yeah, right.
Which I'm like, that's like super brave. I don't know if I'd trust myself to do something like that, but. Yeah, it's super abstract. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about it. I ended up liking it, but I couldn't. It's a hard movie to like recommend to people necessarily. Like,
yeah, I could see that.
I can't give that.
It's not a movie I'm going to revisit very many times.
No, definitely not. What's your least favorite part of this movie?
I mean, again, I don't love the last act. When it turns into just a haunted house movie, and plus I've just seen too many movies where we introduce the external human threat who turn out to be worse than the zombies themselves, and those have to be taken care of. I really don't like the freeze frame at the end when they crash the car through the gate.
Right.
It's very jarring.
Like, what?
This is a movie that didn't have any freeze frames in it. Right. And now all of a sudden I just wait for the, like, a Miller Boyette production credit to appear over the freeze frame. Do you have a least favorite part?
I don't like that it's in the same sequence, like the haunted house zombie part at the end when Jim releases the zombies to sort of like flush all the other soldiers out. And then, I mean, it's a great shot. It's very cinematic looking, but then the infected soldier, he's like, they're all like in the room and they're kind of like, what's that noise? And they all look to the window at the same time. And then the infected guy's there like looking at them.
Hey,
like,
guys!
Right? Like, what the hell is he doing up there?
Right.
Like,
just hanging out.
He makes so much damn, like those things make so much noise. You're yelling and screaming and slobbering everywhere. And then he's silently going to stand there waiting for him. And I was like, well, whatever. It's fine. It's a small thing, but I didn't
one of
really
those moments that has to work as cinema and not as narrative.
That's right. You can see the reds of his eyes.
Yeah, you could.
And the way that you can see the red in mine.
Have you seen the sequel?
It's the same thing where like I feel like I've definitely seen parts of it, but if you were to ask me what's the plot of the entire movie, I like couldn't tell you. I know that what's the actor's name? Robert Carlyle?
Yeah.
I know that he's in it and it's about like his daughter
Jeremy Renner is in it, I believe.
Yeah, and I vaguely remember those things, but again, I couldn't tell you the plot if
I saw it when it was in theaters. I don't remember it. I remember it having a pretty incredible opening 5 to 10 minutes. sort of a prologue that's like better than anything else in the movie.
Oh,
but it is a movie that I know people have reassessed over the years, and you know, it has become this underrated thing where, hey guys, 28 Weeks Later is actually really good. So I do need to go back and see it again.
Yeah, I really wanted to rewatch it because I felt like, the Blu-ray that I bought, it has both.
This movie, nice.
And that one in it together. Oh. So I'm like,
that's excellent.
I might go do that later.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't get to watch it. So
just today, a story broke that Danny Boyle, you know, has been saying he has an idea for 28 months later or whatever it is, you know, another installment.
Is it like a Before Sunrise like situation?
I believe so.
28 years later.
Naomi Harris and Cillian Murphy reunite in Vienna.
It's the homecoming, right?
There's trash can fires everywhere.
He missed his plane.
Anything else about 28 Days Later you want to say?
No, it's good. It's really good.
It is good.
It holds up.
Yeah.
Like, it's still, not that I didn't expect it to hold up, but it's good. I liked it. And I don't always watch zombie movies, but
not a big horror guy.
I am and I'm not.
Okay.
But I've seen Dawn of the Dead. Like, sure. I would watch this movie. I would watch, you know. I think there's certain, like, supernatural horror I couldn't do.
Okay.
Like you guys went to Sin Apocalypse. Like,
yeah.
Like, I think I would enjoy going to Sin Apocalypse as, like, an experience, but I would be like, oh, I don't know if I want to watch, like, Satanic Panic. Like, okay. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But no, I like this. This was good.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, man.
As always, you can find us every day at fthismovie.com. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com or hit us on Twitter at fthismovie. We're on Facebook. Listen to us, rate, review, subscribe in iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're all over the place. And don't forget to get your tickets for July 15th at the Elk Grove Theater, to the Future.
It's so much. Two shows for the price of one.
Right? Mark's going to do something crazy, I promise.
Yeah, I'm going to get a bunch of blankets, and I'm going to sew a message while the podcast is going on. It's going to say, help. Please save me.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.